Let the trap!
With Dooner, welcome to Monday.
Y'all have a nice weekend?
Mine was pretty relaxing, but it wasn't for everybody. There's a bunch of truckers that were stuck on Donner Pass over the weekend, despite all the warnings we gave on this show, the national media, even the newsletter. Maybe I'll ask one of my guests, too, how the trucking works on that. In fact, we have a lot of guests today, so I'm just going to get straight into the rundown because one of them is already here. There's a ton of stuff that happened. Welcome to Monday. It's episode 689 of What the Truck. Today on the show, I'm joined by Dad of Two Roadside, Corey from there. We're going to discuss that semi-truck. Did you guys see this on Friday? The semi-truck that went over the Clark Memorial Bridge, hanging on by a thread. I posted the reverse angle on that over the weekend. It got a ton of likes on it and everything. We'll break down what happened there. We'll break down the rescue. We'll break down what towing costs and recovery would be on something like that. And like I mentioned, maybe I will ask about recovery on Donner too. We have hydrogen semis are starting to hit the highway this year. We're going to meet Hyzon Motors CEO Parker Meeks to learn about the latest about their zero emission trucks. Hyzon, they recently delivered four of its fuel cell trucks to Performance Food Group. So we're going to find out why that's just a start. What's good in hydrogen? Up Partners has released its 2024 The Moving World Report about macro micro trends in mobility. We have an excellent guest from our co-founder, Cyrus Segarra. He's going to break down the trends that are driving the global economy. He's also got a really, really cool like drone jet. I was looking on his LinkedIn. He's got this really cool drone jet I got to ask him about. I have so many questions. Whimsy Intermodal CEO Matt O'Mara is going to be here. He's going to dive into the latest trends on drayage and ports. And we got Traveler Scott Cornell. He's going to talk about the factors that are driving up high insurance costs for all you drivers out there. In fact, I had a guy DM me just last week, and he said, I got my insurance renewals, haven't gotten into a single accident, and I'm thinking of tapping out because I can no longer afford to be in the game. But right now, we have Corey from Dad of Two Roadside. Corey, great to see you, brother.
What's up, dude? This is like the Super Bowl for towing, man. This is it right here.
It was such a wild scene that came through the wire on Friday with that truck that almost went over the edge. It literally looked like a scene out of an action movie. If you told me it was fake or AI, I would have thought that before I even thought this was real. We got some stunning pictures. The guy had a rappel down like Spider-Man. This guy, Bryce Carden, by the way, little cowbell for him. He's the big hero. If you guys aren't familiar, the Louisville Fire Department said this happened around noon on Friday, in case you missed it. That's the Clark Memorial Bridge over there. We might have to go check that out at Matt's. I already told Evan. I'm like, dude, bring me by there. We got to do a live on location. But a lady was driving a truck on there, gets into an accident, almost falls into the river. Louisville Fire Department comes, takes about 40 minutes to rig this whole thing up. They saved the lady who was driving it. It was that gentleman named Bryce Carden. They said the lady was just praying the whole time. She's former military, so maybe her veteran experience helped her get through this thing. And she said when she finally got back on land, she let the tears come out. She finally broke down. But Corey, the reason you're here is I want to know. I was looking at this. The first thing I was wondering is like, how much does this cost? How did they get this truck back up the bridge?
So what we did is, you reached out late last week. And so I started dialing for dollars, right? I called up some of the heavy guys that I know that have been involved in stuff similar. And if we were to base this on Massachusetts rates, what the set rate is for police rotation, this is going to come in between $80,000 and $100,000.
Wow.
You got three rotators that average $1,500 an hour. So going back, I watched this. There's 11 hours of video. So if you factor in 11 hours from the first kind of clip this started, they were probably already on scene over 2 hours, standing by waiting for rescue to finish what they were doing. So you had 2 hours on the front, that's 13, and figure two more hours on the back. So this is roughly a 15-hour incident for response. You got three rotators, a supervisor. I see a recovery, kind of a recovery trailer in there. Also, they had two flatbeds on scene. And, something we would have responded with, like we call them skilled laborers. You'd have had three there. I think at one point I counted about six in the video, But you know, it's the cost to do this recovery is probably going to be in that 80 to 100 grand if it happened up here on the Tobin Bridge. You know, again, everybody's rate's different, but you know, that's what our police rotation would have allowed for billing.
But what, you mentioned these rotators. What kind of equipment is that? What would you have to bring over to perform a recovery like this?
So going back and watching the footage, these guys, they're basically a semi truck with a crane built in. So, and where the crane part of that truck rotates from side to side, front to back, most of them are roughly 350 degree rotation around the truck. So you could pull from the side of the truck, not necessarily from the back of the truck. Cause there's very little rear area to work. You've got two lanes there. You've got, you know, an eastbound and a westbound lane. You don't have four lanes or six lanes to work from. You're working out of two lanes to try to pull 53-foot trailer. I think that one was a 48, but a 48-foot trailer and a day cab through that small opening. You know, that was some skill. That was some A-level effort out of those guys.
I got to ask you, have you ever had to do you mentioned the Tobin Bridge. Have you, in Massachusetts, have you ever had to do a bridge recovery like this?
No, most of the ones that I've been on have been shot the bridges. You know, they either shoot out before or go over the edge. A hangar like this, I don't ever remember one up here where we've had a hangar. But we've definitely had some shoot the bridge and end up in the water below it. Actually, I think I posted recently a national record out of Portsmouth and Maine had one up on 95 that ended up down in the water below.
One thing you have to take note of, too, is look at that rear angle. Look at how this thing is pinned there. It's got the reefer fuel tank on the bottom, and the rear of the trailer is just pinned across one of these crossbars on the bridge. That's the only thing keeping this truck up there. I was surprised they don't put, like, cables or something I guess maybe it wouldn't work. I don't know, to keep it secure.
So at that point, with the, again, you don't know what the structural damage is. So those rotators, two of them are sitting on either end of that bridge waiting to back in. But while they're doing the structural recovery, the high lift recovery, they're not going to want to put any undue stress on that bridge or that trailer till they recover her out of that cab. You know, bridges shake. You drive on them with weight, they're going to shake. You don't want to do any risk that you don't have to until that human is out of that truck. If you watch any of this video, you'll see that the first truck in hooks to the rear of that truck to keep it. And one of the things I thought was pretty interesting watching this film too, Derner, was that they never, until they got the rear wheels of the tractor, they never hooked to the tractor, only the reefer, until they got the rear wheels up on that deck. Because if that kingpin let go, they didn't want to take a truck with it, because it would. If that took off, the energy that it would create falling would literally pull that tow truck over the edge and into the water with it.
Yeah, that would have been a big concern of mine. You just look at the wave of that thing and the angle that it was heading off. But expensive, but I mean, worth it. I don't think that's predatory. How else are you going to get that truck on there? Although some people said it would be cheaper just to let it fall into the river. Is that true?
No, because once you start talking environmental and recovery, you know, some, the EPA is going to want it out of the river. They don't want it in the river. So now you got barges and dredges and, I mean, cranes and, you know, on barges. Nah, I mean, it'd be 10 times the cost that thing hits the water.
Now, Corey, we get a ton of nor'easters over in Massachusetts. We've never had like a 12-foot of snow storm. Show some of this Donner Pass footage. A bunch of truck drivers they ignored the warnings, or dispatch ignored the warnings. Somebody ignored the warnings, because this storm has been known about for over a week. I know they don't always come true, but by Thursday and Friday, it was very clear all this snow was coming through. How does tow factor in when you got to do a weather recovery like this, or help these drivers out?
Yeah, so, you know, the sad part is that you're going to hear a lot of people crying about predatory towing with this one. But the reality is, you had warning, you shouldn't have been there in the first place. But, you know, what happens is, once the graders and they clear that kind of to the right in the photo, you know, that passable lane, once they clear that, it's going to be all hands on deck. You're going to have as many trucks up on that pass as you can get, whether it's your local guys or they bring stuff in. Because there's no way to clear enough snow from every truck to get them all to move out. And you can see there in this portion where he's literally trying to push in front of that truck to open it up. But it's not. They're never going to go anywhere. So, you know, you're going to spend, you know, the better portion of 3 or 4 days just pulling trucks from that snowbank and that drift.
What you said someone would call it predatory. Why? What is like the cost outlay for something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it varies, right? So, you know, if you're up there with a truck, you got to cover the cost. So,
yeah.
You know, if you're charging $1,200 a truck, I mean, is that predatory? I'd say no, because again, it's not your equipment. You don't have to stand out there in the freezing cold hooking the thing up and dragging it out of the snowbank. But, you know, even if you're charging $500-$600 a truck, you know, that whole train is going to get expensive real quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, too. I mean, you see, like, some big name brand trucks. You see Walmart. You had Amazon stuck in there. I mean, companies that probably should know better than sending their trucks. But it happens every time. And, you know, we don't know the full story. Could have been drivers ignoring dispatch and ignoring companies. You don't know. Maybe they didn't have a place to park. Maybe they didn't have a place to. But either way, guys like you got to deal with it now. Now, if you're over in the New England area and you find yourself in a jam, you're either falling off the Tobin Bridge or a nor'easter comes and you're stuck on 93 somewhere, who do they call?
Hit us up. We'll find you somebody. We'll get you off the road. Hit us up at DOT Roadside on the Twit machine, and or you can find us on Google. Hit us up. We'll either get you out ourselves or we'll find somebody to help you.
Corey, thank you so much, man, for giving us some insight onto what happened.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, appreciate it. Take care. Take it easy. All right, everybody. Meanwhile,
tech CEOs, we're disrupting the entire space.
We're tech CEOs. We're changing the world.
We're tech CEOs. We'll tell you we're building an AI company, but really, we just bought a ChatGPT integration.
We're tech CEOs. We'll give our employees unlimited PTO, but foster a culture to make sure they never use it.
We're tech CEOs. We'll scale way too fast and then lay a bunch of people off and blame it on macroeconomic conditions.
We're tech CEOs. We'll announce our return to office policy from our mansions in Mykonos.
We're tech CEOs.
We look like this. We're tech CEOs. We're building an AI company.
In the cloud.
On the blockchain.
Or whatever the next hot tech fad is.
We're tech CEOs.
We just need a little more capital.
Please.
Please. Please, we'll give you a board seat.
That's an amazing job. That was the real corporate bro and my tech CEO. You guys did an awesome job on I'm a tech CEO. John at Yuba says, as a former tech CEO, I found this deeply offensive to my industry, disrupting cloud AI integrated, definitely not API purchase, startup driving, digital transformation in the cloud. All right. Hey, we got a great guest today, Cyrus Cigari, co-founder at Up Partners. What was that? Like, I was on your LinkedIn before this interview and you had this, I thought it was a drone at first. And then I looked closer and it was like an actual full, like flying machine.
Yeah. So there's, before I answer specifically what that one was, like just to set the stage, there's about 400 companies developing some sort of flying car. And we're talking companies from, you know, Honda related or Toyota related and Boeing and Airbus. And that particular one that you're talking about is a company called Pivotal, based up in Silicon Valley. Our CEO is not as bro-y and techie as the guy that you just showed there a second ago. But it's a vehicle that you'd actually buy today. It's about $190,000. It's fully electric, takes off vertically, lands vertically, doesn't require a pilot's license to fly, which sounds crazy. But the reason that is because one, it's below a certain weight where it becomes technically an ultralight as far as the FAA is concerned. But it's also really, really easy to fly, like as easy as a drone to fly. You can fly 20, 30 miles, take off in your backyard, land, have some fun. So you kind of consider it like a three-dimensional air, all-terrain vehicle that creates a whole lot of hell yes. So it's real. You can buy it now. And it's the future.
I highly recommend go check. It's a vehicle called the Helix. And this isn't really necessarily what this segment is about, but I just thought it was super neat. I saw it right before I came on air and I'm like, I got to ask him. And I was also looking at your background and it's like, you're not some noob to flying. You've been flying helicopters and planes for like over 30 years now.
Yeah. Since I was a little bambino, pretty much anything to do with flying has been my life, from being an instructor to an engineer to building businesses in and around aviation. And really it's kind of the genesis of this sort of report that we're going to be talking about is really everything in mobility is changing, from things in the sky, ground, air, sea, space. And it's a pretty exciting time to be alive and get to tell the story about what's going on.
Now, this is an amazing, it's about 150 some odd page report. It's got amazing charts, amazing graphics in it. It's called the Moving World Report 2024 Macro and Micro Trends in Mobility. First of all, before we even get into some of the takeaways I had out of it, tell me why you guys put this together.
Well, my day job is an investor, an early stage technology investor in the future of mobility. And when we go and deploy hundreds of millions of dollars into, you know, ideas that are going to transform the way we move people and goods, land, air, sea, and space. We like to have a really clear point of view on where we see the future going. And that takes a lot of work to really have the research-based approach to investing. And instead of just keeping it for ourselves, we open source it, we share it with the world to, one, help inform others that are thinking about investing in the space and also be challenged. You know, we have some cases, controversial points of views on things, other things that are more aligned with sort of what the general population is saying. And it allows us to create a conversation and to inform, inspire, activate. And also, if we're wrong, I want to hear somebody say, hey, you're wrong, don't do that. And then we can allocate our capital a little bit more efficiently from there.
You know, I thought this was really interesting. One of the first pages on here is mobility is changing everything, everywhere, all at once. There's a whole bunch of logos. We got a shot of it. Image two, guys. Tell me a little bit about this, though. How is everything changing all at once? What's going on in mobility? It's been an electric, rapid fire space, but I do this every day. So sometimes I don't even lens out far enough.
Look, I do this every day as well. And it's crazy. Like, it's so hard to keep up with how much is changing from power plant systems to control systems to manufacturing systems to marketplaces to how we build things and move things. And so what we're seeing is really a convergence of what we call exponential technologies and multiple exponential technologies all hitting at the same time. And it's hard enough to keep up with one exponential technology, but when you have things like AI, which our friends on the last video were talking about, but it's very real and applicable for mobility solutions, from additive manufacturing technologies to all these new electrification trends. And, you know, I can list about 10 of them. But when you create these new technologies, you can unlock new opportunities. And so that chart you're showing is, frankly, like, it was busy, but if we were to include everything, it's probably 100 times bigger than that, because there's thousands and thousands of companies that are in the mobility space that weren't here like a couple of years ago. And honestly, most will fail, but there will be a handful that are going to significantly transform the way we interact with the physical world and how we move atoms. And that's really the way we think about being a mobility investor, is how do we more efficiently move atoms from A to B, cleaner, faster, safer, lower cost.
I love that. That's all supply chain. You know, let's go to a little bit of an older technology, though, because I found one of the pages on here sort of astounding. It was the empire is building again. And it's something people complain about all the time about the U.S. Why don't we have more rail? Europe's got a ton of rail. Now China. And if you, on this chart for you audio viewers, it's showing 2008 to 2020. And the 2008 chart, there's almost no long distance rail lines throughout China. And then you look at this chart and it looks like there's veins everywhere inside a body. I mean, there's just lines everywhere. What happened to this huge growth? Because we talk so much about decoupling from China now, but it looks like they've really built out their network.
China, you know, it's a very, it's a hot topic. And there's a pathway to look at China as the big bad boogeyman. I look at it a little differently. You know, I'm as proud of an American and as you'll find, a patriot. But I see China doing something really important for us in the West, which is being a really good competitor. Now, they may not do it in the best of ways at times, but we better wake up. China is showing us what can happen when you have policy, capital, technology, workforce aligned with a set vision. And what you're seeing in that image there, in a matter of 12 years, that pretty much covered the entire country with high-speed rail, that's extraordinary. And as the title says, that's empire building. And again, it's very relevant because in China, they've built empires before. And so really, there's a call to action to come out of this for our policymakers, for our investor community, for business leaders, that once you create an environment where business can work and you have government that's like, hey, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to clear away all the obstacles, bureaucratic obstacles, social obstacles, whatever that are aligned, you can do some pretty extraordinary things. And I think it's clear that, you know, China made a decision, we will do this and nothing's going to stop us. And now you can see they've got cheap, efficient, safe, high-speed rail throughout the entire country.
It's a little frustrating. I mean, we've talked, I mean, how many years has it, how many decades, I shouldn't even say years, how many decades have we talked about that high-speed Los Angeles to San Francisco line? I mean, as long as they've been building out that China map. Hey, look, maybe the world will make some different decisions. Election years always factor deeply into transportation. It always seems like something bad has happened. And here is Maybe bad news? There's 2 billion people in 64 countries representing 40% of global GDP are all having elections this year. Huge world in flux. How do you see this playing out?
Well, if I wish I could tell you I know, because then I could be betting my portfolio, you know, very, very clearly into the future. But I would say in the near term, it's going to be very uncomfortable. I think it's going to be very uncomfortable for sort of day-to-day citizens sort of watching a lot of change happening very rapidly. And humans aren't made for very rapid change. And unfortunately, with all these elections coming up real time, it's going to be unsettling. But I do think there is a silver lining in that, you know, I'm pretty long on democracy, and democracy may be messy and it can be painful. But I think you're seeing in places like El Salvador and Argentina, where democracy is turning nations that have been in really difficult places into places of hope. You know, El Salvador went from the most dangerous country in the world to the most safe country in the Western Hemisphere in a matter of 3 years. There's a bunch of reasons that happened, but it has to do with leadership. And, you know, Argentina is kind of going through something very similar in terms of a kind of throwing out the old and creating some new. And I think it's really inspiring and it's exciting. And so to look at what's not working, we can all give lots of things that are not working, but also to point to what is working and take those elements and to bring them into our home states or cities or countries and apply some of those learnings, that's pretty exciting. I'll give you one very specific example. It's a place like UAE. I just got back from Dubai. And man, if you want to see government working, go to UAE. It's so inspiring, so hopeful. And I hope some of our leaders here get an opportunity to learn from that and apply some of those lessons here.
You know, one place that we have really sped things up in the U.S. is with orbital launches. And it came at a good time because we moved those out of Russia back to the United States with that SpaceX partnership and NASA. But now you're seeing a ton of them. The investor side of you, put your investor hat on. Do you like this space? Do you like this space from like a deep space supply chain perspective? Or are there only a couple players?
Let me just give you a little context. You're seeing that line shoot up for the United States showing significant increase in launch. That's one guy. That's Elon.
Yeah.
That has created that. And, you know, my goodness, America would look a lot less exciting and interesting with that Elon, with all the things he's doing. And so if you imagine, if you take Elon out, China would be the leader in space launch right now. So that just sets some context within that, because we as a country don't launch to space. We use private companies to do that. Now, during the COVID time, there was 10, 15, you know, pretty big space companies all sort of launched through SPAC and are doing really cool, interesting things across the ecosystem. I do think at the end, you're going to have a consolidation of a lot of these sort of space companies and just get into a handful of them that can manage launch. Launch is just one part of the ecosystem. You've got sort of space stations and other sort of constellations and communication and key enabling technology that's supportive of a space economy. I'm very long space, but very cautiously. It's a great way to light a lot of money on fire, like literally and you know, figuratively as well.
And figuratively as well. I have one last chart here before we send people where they can find this whole report, because it's way too comprehensive to get the whole thing out in one segment. But this one really touches on a place that we go into often, which is trucking. And it says 50,000 trucking companies have ceased operations since May 2022. And an additional 500,000 drivers have stopped driving in the past 14 months. This is a wild chart because you hear so much talk about, hey, there's a driver shortage or this, a narrative that we constantly counter here. But do you think that we're going to see like recovery anytime soon in this space?
Well, recovery is, we have to put that in context, right? We had this COVID spike where everybody was freaking out about having enough supply in their warehouses. So you had people over-ordering to create a buffer where people could have access to goods. And secondly, you had a lot of people staying at home and needed to get furniture and they, you know, made their homes upgraded. And there's a significant increase in home building. And look, with interest rates as where they are, we're not going to see a big uptake in home building for a long time. That's a big driver for trucking. I think it's going to be quite a while before we see any sort of return to what we just saw. And frankly, I don't know if we should see a return to what we saw. It was irrational. I know that you guys have done such a great job of covering the pricing of shipping and sort of all the supply chain challenges. But I think it's good to get back to rationality. You know, there was definitely the COVID sugar high that we were all experiencing. Now, I think the big trend we're seeing is this nearshoring and bringing things back onshore. And that's going to create a totally different set of supply chain constraints and limitations that will create new opportunity for new types of drivers, new types of technologies, and new impact to the economy.
Well, Cyrus, it was really awesome to meet you. I will have to have you back on to talk about Pivotal and those cool aircraft that you're making. But in the meantime, this is a really good report. I'd love my listeners to go check it out. Where do I send them to go find it?
Yeah, if you go to up.partners.node.com, go there and you can click on the Moving World report, the link, and download it. And if you don't agree with anything we say in the report, I want to hear about it. You know, our email is on the website, and you can reach out. But if you find it interesting, share it with your friends, and we'll look forward to working and releasing the next one next year.
Well, it's great to meet you. Thank you for your time today, and thanks for stopping by the show. Everyone, go check out that report.
Great to be here. Thanks so much.
Take care. All right. Elsewhere, everybody. This looks like, by the way, this looks something like The Twilight Zone or Black Mirror. This is the neighborhood in Utah. It was invaded by tumbleweeds before the snowstorm. All this wind brought here. And by the way, tumbleweeds, I know like most people are used to them from cartoons. They think they're from Texas. They're not. They're actually an invasive species. They're a Russian thistle. And what happens is they break off and they get blown throughout the land. You see all that there. And they pick up these giant balls. By the way, they're also not soft. They're like covered in spiky thorns. And you're going to see, look, that kid got hit by one. He has to get off his bike and check out his thigh. He took out his shin hitting that tumbleweed. There's an entire house that gets covered. I'm sure like their vehicles got all scratched up. I don't know. I've never lived in tumbleweed country. Have any of you guys? That's wild. How do you get rid of all these? Some of the comments said you got to take pitchforks and you have to set them on fire. But when it's so windy, I don't know. Seems dangerous. Anyways, let's talk to Parker Meek, CEO at Hyzon Motors. Parker, you ever had to deal with tumbleweeds like that?
Texas, and I've never seen anything like that. I spent a lot of time in the old oil patch in Midland and West Texas. That is insane. It's a problem.
Those tumbleweeds in Utah go hard. I think, yeah, everyone blames Texas. And it's like, hey, have you seen Utah? Parker, first time on the show. Introduce yourself to everybody.
I'm really excited to be here, Darren. Thanks so much for having me. Big fan of the show. Parker Meeks, I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Hyzon Motors. Hyzon is founded in fuel cell technology. So hydrogen fuel cells powering hard-to-abate mobile products. Trucks are the first use case that we're doing. The company was founded in late 2019, spun out on the NASDAQ, publicly traded in 2021. We are based in Chicago, Illinois area, Bowling Brook, Illinois, for the Chicagolanders. And we have our 200-kilowatt fuel cell system is our premier flagship product, the largest single-stack fuel cell system in trucks outside of China that we're aware of, at least. It's in trucks. We started deploying and delivering fuel cell trucks globally on three continents last year. And we're really excited to partner with some major fleets globally to start this decarbonization transition through, we believe, the technology that's best suited for certainly long haul and many segments of heavy duty trucks, which is hydrogen fuel cells.
You know, this seems like it's going to be an exciting year for hydrogen. Hyzon, a lot of the participants in this market, the hydrogen companies, the hydrogen stations, the government themselves, there's so much talk in this space right now. And a lot of it has to do with the challenges with battery electric. I have the ports on here all the time. They're complaining all the time. Some of the long haul companies complaining all the time. But you said something interesting. You said your first goal is trucks. Why did you take on heavy duty semi trucks first? Some would argue it could be one of the harder problems to try and solve.
Yeah, Junior, look, I mean, a couple of reasons. One, the company, our former parent company took the same technology, put it in a few hundred trucks over in China to start. And that was important because back in 2017-18, the West had no interest really in doing fuel cell trucks. China did. So, you know, our technologies had experience to prove that this use case works. The second is when you look at emissions, right, trucking represents a significant portion of mobility emissions, and it's one that has subsidy availability now in several developed markets. In the U.S., California specifically, ports are coming now with the IRA and the Zero Emission Port Equipment Funds there. And then in Europe. So there's a government political focus on trucking. It affects communities in a big way, right? So when you look where there's goods, there's people, and there's trucks, right? So if you abate trucks, you're able to abate and impact people's lives. So it's that nexus of we have experience, real deep experience doing it in a prior version. There's subsidy available. There's political motivation. There's customer interest. There's ESG goals at board levels in a lot of the largest fleets in the world. And our former parent company really tested that thesis. We saw the opportunity. We're going for it. And I think our traction is showing that, there is interest in getting this thing going.
Hey, why? Now I'm curious, because I'm looking at the truck. Why a cab over design? I know they're big over in Europe, but we don't see them as often here. But when I do see hydrogen trucks, they do tend to be cab overs.
So we actually have a unique strategy, right? So we take our technology and fit it into existing OEM high market share cabin chassis that is tailored for the market. So we actually don't use a cab over here in the U.S. We have a conventional nose truck in the U.S. I'm not going to say whose it is, but you can look at it and see whose it is that we focused on. One of the highest market share trucks in the market in the U.S. We have the cab over format, again, a very high share and growing base vehicle that we focus on there. And in the garbage truck, we use another very popular global brand for a garbage truck based cabin chassis. And that's important because it's a truck that, first of all, to your point, we don't believe cab over trucks have high market share here in the future just because certain zero emission trucks are using a cab over in the U.S. We think cab over is preferred for a reason. We think conventional is preferred for a reason, which is why our truck is focused on a conventional cabin and chassis. And additionally, using a truck customers already know and love with a dealer network that's already established and knows how to service it, and without having some big expensive factory that we have to amortize, we use third-party assembly to assemble our trucks. One of the leading third-party assemblers in the U.S., Fontaine Modification, is our partner to assemble our trucks at scale. Charlotte, North Carolina is where our trucks are being assembled now with Fontaine. That's where the trucks that were delivered last year came from. And that allows us to make a unique statement, which is we have the right truck for the right market, to your point. And we also have a cost structure where the trucks we delivered to Performance Food Group, our large anchor fleet here in the U.S., had positive cash contribution margin back to Hyzon, which is a unique statement in today's market when most others that are delivering trucks are saying that their trucks are pretty negative cash margin today. So it's a scalable model with the right truck, with the right cost structure that we can scale as fast as the market's ready to.
So you've done a lot of testing. We saw it on the racetrack. We saw the guys in the lab coats. But now you have to put some out in the wild. Performance Food Group got a delivery. First of all, a little congratulations on getting some of these out to market and getting some testing. But tell us what happened here. What's the deal with PFG?
Yeah, PFG, look, this was, to be clear, this was a two-year journey, right? So Performance Food Group, first of all, tremendous customer partner, and it is a partnership, right? These are very senior transformations fleets are doing to their fleets with new technology. It takes a real leader like PFG who's committed to decarbonize. PFG said publicly they have a goal of taking 20% per case of diesel out of their fleet by 2030. That's a real goal for a fleet with 7,000 trucks, right? So we started this journey with the basics. Here's the truck. Here's the cost structure. Here's the performance today. Here's the performance in generation 2 and 3. We did a trial with them in their out of their Fontana, California location in the summer of 2022. 100 to 107 degree temperatures. Learnings in that trial as well. A lot of great feedback for us working with PFG, one of many large fleets who have been through that process with us. And further shaped exactly where the truck should go, where the fuel is going to come from, what's the value proposition, and then how do we see this scaling and going, assuming that we succeed. So we're very thankful to have a clear defined path with PFG that we're betting on ourselves. So a 50 truck commercial agreement that we put in place with PFG, the first five trucks binding on the 110 kilowatt fuel cell, which is the current generation. Those first four of those five were delivered last year and announced in Jan. The fifth is coming in the next few months. And then a tranche of 15 trucks on the 200 kilowatt platform, which is pending a 200 kilowatt truck trial, which we do anticipate doing this year. And then a final tranche of 30 trucks, which is an option for us to negotiate with PFG, assuming success. So this is how the market is going to come to life. It's going to be large fleets with real ESG commitments who want to get going, where we start out with a clear vision of how this thing scales, but with a small number of trucks to de-risk, and then we scale as we go.
Are you having PFG push these at all? Are you doing some live testing out there with them? What are you learning? What kind of data are you getting back? Have you pushed it as far as you can go range-wise, stuff like that?
Yeah, that's what's great about PFG, right? They're clear, and this is the customer that we want. We don't want restrictions on these trucks. Like, we know the boundaries. We know what they can and can't do. The truck today estimated to get between 300 and 350 mile range today. That's on the 110 kilowatt. We've already said the 200 kilowatt truck in track testing is showing up to 20-25% fuel efficiency gains And that's sort of adjusted. We're seeing bigger gains on a single route basis. But we take the truck today from all the learnings we've had in testing since March of 22 in total, right? And with all the work we've done with PFG. And these are full routes, PFG drivers, PFG owns these trucks. And they're driving them through their route tree within some boundaries of where we know that they may not be able to go based on range, right? So a lot of learnings that we're seeing, not just from PFG, but from other fleets, where it's not just in the performance of the truck, how we're adjusting software, adjusting the balance of battery usage versus fuel cell usage and energy storage, but also in how the truck looks and feels. We've adjusted things like step configuration. We've adjusted some of the controls, right? So the truck you see today, what's great, right? We still have truck one, right? Truck one that went into the first external display at ACT Expo in September of 2021. And when you compare truck one to the trucks we have today on the test track, yes, the performance is better. There's been learnings in the fuel cell, learnings in the powertrain, et cetera. But even the configuration of how the driver gets in and out of the truck, how the driver operates the truck, all these things have been built into now tens of thousands of miles of real experience, where we tell the drivers, treat it like a diesel, don't baby it. We need to learn.
You were just over in DC recently. How is Washington viewing hydrogen, and does it make you optimistic their view of sort of what needs to happen for this to ultimately be viable and be that zero emission solution everyone can use?
So I think, honestly, first of all, it was great to go to DC, meet with our local U.S. Congressman Foster, who is the only PhD physicist in the Congress. So a tremendous luck for us to have him in our district supporting us. What's interesting about Washington is there's a lot of Washington that does get it, right? So when you look at the DOE, the Department of Energy, the Hydrogen Hub program that they announced, they awarded 7 DOE hydrogen hubs for advancement, right? The Hyzon's proud to have supported several of those hubs. You know, what DOE recommended to Treasury and to the IRS about how that should be implemented, all of that we think made perfect sense. Unfortunately, when other entities like IRS and Treasury have interpreted those recommendations, and when they're finalizing things like the production tax credit in Section 45V that is a game changer globally for the U.S. to be able to lead in hydrogen, not just for trucking, you know, that interpretation has gone a bit sideways. And now we're all trying to help and pitch in to advise DC and the different elements of the government what needs to happen to unlock hydrogen. So I do think there is broad-based support that in a decarbonized world, hydrogen has a real role to play. There's debate about how big it is. There's debate between, you know, Elon Musk saying fuel cells are fuel cells, which I love, and actual economics that fleets see, and why battery electric trucks are struggling and why hydrogen fuel cell use cases for fleets are only opening. And that's just in our engagement with fleets. Washington sees that. Secretary Granholm has been very supportive. They certainly want battery to succeed, but they also know we need hydrogen. And what's critical is that we do everything we can to make sure every entity that's involved, from DOE to IRS to Treasury, et cetera, understand the economics, the fundamentals, what it takes to get this market going. So I think there's plenty in place today through the IRA, the production tax credit that I mentioned, the Zero Emission Port Equipment Fund, which is a $2.6 billion fund in the IRA that has drayage trucks and on-site hydrogen fueling stations in the subsidy scheme, with ports applying for that now. And even to some of the states, you know, the fundamentals are there. We just have to make sure that as an industry, we're helping make sure it's rational, it's logical, and it's doing what it needs to do to allow us to only be on subsidy as long as we need to.
Very interesting. And hey, great insight on there. How do people learn more about what you're doing with PFG? Maybe they want to start their own program with you guys. I'm not sure how much availability you have, but how do I send people to you who are interested in a fuel cell fleet?
So we would love to engage with anyone in the industry, certainly fleets, certainly also others in the fuel space. First of all, LinkedIn, reach out to me directly or any of our executive team. We'd love to connect with you on LinkedIn and our Hyzon LinkedIn page. Our website, www.hyzonmotors.com, is still the place to go for all the latest updates and information outside of the social pages. And that is exactly what we want and need, right? We love engaging with fleets and other participants who don't know what a fuel cell is, maybe don't know what a fuel cell truck really is, or think they know, but want to talk to someone who's in it and living it every day. And I think what you'll find is it's a pretty exciting technology that's ready to go on the road now, and one that can make a lot of sense for a growing segment of a fleet's needs.
Hey, Parker, thank you for your time today. And hey, good luck with the trucks, man. Take care.
Thanks so much, Tim. Talk soon. Take care, man.
All right. Speaking of, take a look at this close call. I hope they have the insurance. This occurred over in Peru. New York Post reports an avalanche of massive boulders tumbled down in a Peruvian mountainside, smashing a pair of trucks Sunday in a jaw-dropping moment that miraculously didn't kill anybody. I'm not trying to ruin your Monday. Nobody died in this incident except for the freight that did get destroyed. It doesn't look like it, though. That looks horrible. A lot of nightmare fuel on this person flying over the side of the bridge. We got people stuck in Donner Pass, maybe eating each other. Peruvian boulders. And now we got Scott Cornell, transportation lead, crime and theft specialist over at Travelers. You ever have something like that happen to you? Fortunately, not me.
I did not, but jaw-dropping was a good description of it because when I watched it, that's some unbelievable stuff right there.
Now, wow. Hey, Scott, I think we're catching
up. I'm glad everybody was okay, though.
I am too. And we're talking a little bit about issues that are plaguing the industry. What are some of those in 2024?
Yeah. So a couple of things. So always great to be back. Thanks for having me again. You know, I don't think 2024 is going to look a whole lot different than 2023. I think you're going to see some similarities in some of the challenges. You might catch me cheating from some notes today. Shout out to Carolyn Capshaw from our research group. She gave me a lot of good stats to put in with the talking points. I'm not great at remembering stats. So if you catch me, I'm just being honest with you up front, my friend, that you may catch me just referring to some notes to get the numbers right. So,
sure. What are some of those numbers? What are you seeing out there?
Well, I don't think there's really any surprise that we're seeing shifting economic conditions, right? There's part of the economy that, you know, impacts trucking for sure. When you look at, as an example, spot rates. So spot rates generally have stabilized, but that's after a 16% drop in 2022, a 19% drop in 2023. So if they're stabilized roughly at about the same levels they were at in 2019, you have to think, all the costs associated with doing business in that environment have continued to go up in that three, almost 4 year time span. So that's not good news, right? There's still rising overhead, but the rates have gone down. When you look at the contract rates, they fell about 7% last year. They're expected to go, I think, another 3% down this year. But again, you still have that rising cost of things like maintenance, overhead, general overhead, things like that. So the days of taking advantage of some of those really nice spot rates that we saw, you know, during the COVID demand time, 2020 to 2021, those are gone. And in fact, a lot of the small companies that came into the marketplace, came into the transportation industry in that 2020 to 2021 time period are really, going back to driving for the bigger companies, or they're merging with bigger companies. And then, you know, you add to that fuel prices. We all know fuel prices haven't gone down really, especially for diesel. And those types of things can have a ripple effect. So when you look at, you know, you and I have talked in the past about cargo theft. Well, recently Arizona entered the top 10 states for cargo theft in the nation. Ooh. Why? Well, there's a few reasons for it. Arizona has a strong growing economy. There's a lot of distribution centers and warehouses being built over in the Phoenix area, things like that. But a lot of the cargo theft that's taking place in Arizona is just across the border from California. Well, why is that? Well, because a lot of the drivers coming out of California are trying to make it to Arizona for cheaper fuel prices. So they stop just across the border in those truck stops that are just over in that Havasu area, things like that. Fuel prices are down probably $2-$2.50 from California prices. And they stop there more frequently, and they're either being followed out of California or they're being targeted out of California or targeted by groups operating in Western Arizona for cargo theft. So we're seeing that cargo theft increase over there. And when you look at all the events going on in the Red Sea and things like that, there's really no expectation that fuel prices are going to come down anytime soon.
Yeah, there's still too many trucks, too many drivers, too many brokers. We've been following that big contraction that's happening. In fact, with Cyrus, we just talked about the 50,000 companies that have left since 2022. And the bad news for this audience is in February, spot rates were down 17%. But Scott, I got a DM. I actually mentioned at the beginning of the show, I got a DM about insurance rates. A lot of drivers have been reaching out recently. I guess they've been going up for a lot of them. One of them said, I haven't been in a single incident. He's an owner-operator. He said, I haven't been in a single incident, got my renewals, and I think I'm tapping out. Can we talk a little bit about higher insurance rates? What's going on here?
There's a lot of things to explain that. You know, when you think about, let's use an example like distracted driving. And that's not necessarily the truck drivers, right? There are a lot of distracted car drivers out there on the roads. But there have been a lot of, accidents. One of our experts is going to be talking to you in a coming show on distracted driving. We have an expert over here that researches that, has a lot of good information on that. You're going to be talking to him in the near future on that. But when you think about what's referred to as that primary side of insurance, and I know you have some familiarity with insurance, right? But when we talk about that primary side, we're talking about the ALGL, auto liability, general liability coverages. And we've all heard about the big nuclear verdicts that are in those. Some of those nuclear verdicts have had some colossal amounts the plaintiffs are getting in the court settlements these days. And the number of nuclear verdicts against trucking companies has been on the rise since 2022. I think they topped $65 million, and that was up from $10 million in 2020. So, you know, that's an impact there for insurance rates on that primary side. Technology really helps in those and can help control some of those accidents or some of those outcomes. You know, when you think about cameras and telematics, things like that, how can they make insurance more affordable? Can they help you reduce your insurance rates? Things like that. You should be thinking about that. Can they lend themselves to reducing the severity of accidents? You know, a while ago, drivers didn't want the cameras. You know, when the cameras first started coming out, drivers didn't want the cameras. Now, a lot of the drivers are asking for the cameras. And nearly three quarters of all private trucking fleets are using in-cab cameras. So when the drivers are asking for that, what you're seeing is a positive impact there. Cameras have exonerated drivers in 63% of the cases where they've been used. And then driver-facing cameras have absolved drivers of responsibility in nearly half of all the incidents where they've been involved. So there's some positives there that you can do. Of course, you know, we've talked about cargo theft and loss frequency there. Cargo theft is at a 10-year high right now. Last year, the industry saw increases in reefer losses as well as truck fires. All those things are going to lend themselves towards increased rates sometimes.
Well, Scott, anything that some of my listeners can do who feel like their rates are just getting too high, that God forbid, they're like that DM I got where someone's looking to tap out. What can they potentially do to bring down some of these costs and feel like they can stay in the game, make it to 2025?
Yeah, good question. I think, you know, an easy comment to make, but I think something that they have to convince themselves of is don't be afraid of collecting and sharing data, especially when it tells a good story, a good safety story. If you're doing things right and you're collecting data that shows that, make sure you're sharing that with your insurance company, and your insurance agent can use that to make your case with your insurance company. Just try and think about different ways you can partner with your insurance carrier. You know, you and I have talked in the past, I mentioned this earlier about, you know, here at Travelers, we have our cargo theft investigation team that goes out. When you talk about cargo theft being at a 10-year high, our cargo theft investigation team just had a big landmark. Since 2009, they've recovered over $100 million of stolen goods for our company. So does your insurance company have a way that you can partner with them? You know, we also have specialized risk control experts that can talk about best practices for driver selection, driver safety, use of the technology, things like that. Companies are out there really working hard to improve driver recruitment. You know, when you talk about driver shortages in general, we talk about the fact that there's 80,000 driver vacancies right now. So when you expand that forward, you're looking at 160,000 by 2030.
Maybe. I don't know. But I look at the market and I look at what's happened with rejects and rates. I'm not sure if I necessarily buy a driver shortage narrative, but maybe in the future, maybe if you don't get enough Gen Z or something, I'm not sure if we're necessarily seeing that in the market right now, but maybe.
No, but when you look at that driver shortage, when you're replacing them, you have less experienced drivers, right? And less experienced drivers may, you know, I'm not sure, but less experienced drivers, you may have some different accidents, or you may have some different losses, things like that, that contribute to some of that.
No, that definitely makes sense right there. I will agree with that, man. So if people want to check out Travelers, they want to get more information from you, they want to maybe get a policy, where do I send them to?
Travelers.com/transportation resources.
Perfect. Hey, Scott, thank you so much. And I look forward to someone coming on to talk distracted driving in the near future, like you mentioned.
Always good to talk to you. Have a great day.
Hey, take care. All right, everybody, rate the strap work. Let's take a look here. By the way, this is a great one. This is Bill Bear posted this. He said, just some of the hay donations by Texans. They said they have enough hay clothes and disinfectant wipes. I also heard they were requesting gift and food cards. This is a link to some farmers affected by it. It's a GoFundMe. I don't have that link. But if you are looking to help out, Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association, they put together some of this relief that you're seeing right here. There's over 500 homes and structures have been destroyed by these fires that ripped through Texas last week. Some of them still burning. Thousands of cattle. Very tough scene, but hey, good to see Texas strong come together and support one another. Right now, though, let's meet Matt O'Mara, president and CEO over at Whimsy Intermodal. Matt, great to see you, man.
Hey, doing a happy Monday.
Hey, I love the Punisher skull hats that you sent me. That hoodie has kept me warm throughout it's been unseasonably cold over here in Chattanooga.
Just the opposite in Chicago, unseasonably warm.
Yeah, do you get like the bugs coming out already? We have like weird moths and stuff, and then like the freeze will come back in, and they're all dead.
Tulips budding, but no, I haven't seen any bugs. A couple flies, that's about it.
Hey, well, people don't know Whimsy, man. If they don't know Whimsy, tell them about Whimsy. What? How did you guys all come together? What do y'all do?
Okay, we do the import and export of international containerized freight out of the Chicago and Kansas City rail hubs. So, drayage.
Drayage. What's good in drayage out of those hubs? What's good? What's happening right now?
Well, it's tough, as everyone knows, right? What's good is the weather. I mean, the whole Donner Pass thing this weekend, you see, snow could be dangerous, cold, and we've been very fortunate. You know, trucks aren't having any problems starting. The weather's good. There's just not enough opportunities for everybody to capitalize on this weather. So
what's your sort of market tip? You know, it's a boring topic at this point, 'cause we talk about it ad nauseum. We've been talking about it since 2022, has just been the drop off, but now we've been a few years into it. How have you managed to survive? What's your tip in intermodal?
Well, you know, we build a great infrastructure, and then we added assets, which are lifts, dispatch, tech, processes then, and we run the processes. We support our drivers. We actually have a waiting list for company and owner-operator drivers right now because when I was an owner-operator in this business, I felt like I never got support, and that's the reason why everybody complains about a driver shortage. It's really not a driver shortage at all. It's the ability to treat them properly, support them, and encourage them. So we really haven't had any difficulties with that at all. We got guys on the bench waiting to come in. So when everybody figures it out, what you do, my greatest idols were J.B. Hunt and UPS, and if you look, they've got an infrastructure, they got assets, and they run processes over and over and over again. When you have an issue, you put a process in to save that issue, avoid that issue in the future. So, and then you support and encourage and train. You go to a restaurant, you go to a trucking company, anything, you get bad service, it's generally due to bad leadership. I take everything, on a grain of salt, and I wear everything on my sleeve, and my team, I call them the SEAL Team 6 of the intermodal, because they can grind it out and pound out loads harder and faster, safer, of course, than anyone else. So you had the travelers on. People need to learn to partner with their insurance companies. It's very important. We have AI cameras in the truck. As far as everybody, the drivers that initially didn't appreciate it, but they, like anything else, like this autonomous, it makes you better. It trains you. It makes you a more professional driver. So training, support, encouragement. This is, driver calls dispatch, all panic. Dispatch job is to talk the driver off the cliff, tell him he hears him, he's going to take care of it, and then he actions it. So that's why I talk about support. Typically in this whole industry, not just drayage, The driver is set up to fail. He fails, and everybody points a finger at him. Bad driver. And it had to do with dispatch or leadership management. It's just that simple. So
wow. Well, why do you – I mean, the drivers always take the blunt of the blame, and it's interesting you said that too. I mean, one of the big issues in here isn't a driver shortage. It's driver turnover, and it's a lot of that treatment, a lot of that frustration that drivers had. How do you keep them on the ranch? How are you keeping your turnover low?
Again, you support them. We got a great support system. We encourage them. We got guys that are working 2, 3, some weeks 4, other guys 5 days a week on occasion. And no, they stick by as thick as thieves because they know that we are very transparent, we're honest, and we do as we say. And it's that simple. I mean, there's no secret sauce to being a good operator.
No, there isn't. Is there a secret sauce? You had I was looking on your page, and you had these MobiCons. So we have a picture of these things. You've had these for like about a year now, judging on when this post came out. You dig these things? How do they work?
Yeah, so part of what happened during COVID is nobody could get access to containers, right? They were stacked 5 high and then right next on top and side of each other, so you couldn't get in. Part of what we're going to do is we're going to use these mobile cons. Everybody's so focused on tech, but really we're focused on moving 40-foot containers from the ramp to the customer, back to the rail or depot as safely and as efficiently as possible. You know, when you talk about hydrogen and electric trucks, everybody I talk to is like, well, who's going to pay for all this? Well, we are. We're going to have to pay for it. In many RFQ meetings, and you talk, you know, you ask somebody how much an electric or hydrogen truck's going to pay more, and you hear crickets.
Yeah.
So, people are just going to have to step up, embrace the technology, and make the best of it.
Yeah, I think everyone's hoping just regulatory-wise that, you know, the big dogs out there buy these fleets up first and drive down costs. I've seen some of these costs. You're talking like $500,000 to $700,000. A lot of money for a truck, especially in a bad market. But space is everything. People talk about tech, but space is everything. You're building a new facility. How is that coming along?
Well, I'm not going to lie. It's been an absolute grind. We spent 18 months doing a phase 1, phase 2, and a phase 3 archaeological dig, which no one in the industry's ever heard about. Grand opening May, be a state-of-the-art container handling facility. 10 transload docks, 5 service bays for trucks, trailers, lift machines, the mobile cons. We got a scale. We're going to be having hydrogen. We got 10 supercharger stations in for trucks. And we're going to be just using it as a research and development center, trying to do things more efficiently, better for the environment, all of those things. We originally had specced out. We spent a year and a half on a microgrid, and due to the poor revenue in the industry lately, some things have to get scrapped. So, I'll have you out if you're available sometime in May for a grand opening. We're going to be doing some really neat things there.
It sounds really future. You said there's going to be hydrogen. How much is it? It's got to be expensive to put like that grid and like hydrogen fueling stations in there.
No, well, we get wetline diesel delivered now, and we'll just get hydrogen delivered as well. Obviously, we're still working out the details on that. So probably 3rd, 4th quarter, hopefully we could bring that on. So wow. That's what we're looking for.
Do you have any trucks yet? Have you ordered any like BEV or fuel cell trucks?
Well, like everybody else, we ordered 5 Teslas.
I've heard about that.
And then try and get your money back. You can't get your money back.
I know a guy who's got $1 million deposit down. He put it down, I think, in like 2020 or maybe 2020. He said he's been out for like 4 years, $1 million, waiting on 5 Tesla semis.
Yeah. So last year I was at a test drive for the Nikola in Detroit. Beautiful truck. We're hoping to get some of the electric trucks now that they started rebuilding them again. And then probably get the Nikola Uber hydrogen trucks as well.
Oh yeah, I know a company that just got one. They pulled them out, and PFG's having some good results with their Hyzon on one. So there's a lot of options in the market. I guess it's just they're very expensive, and it's figuring out what's good for you. Unfortunately, we're running a little short on time, but people who need their drayage needs taken care of in the Chicago area or anywhere else you cover, where would I send them? Where would I send them to?
Yeah, whimsyintermodal.com. Of course, we're on LinkedIn, Facebook, X, and yeah, that's it.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for coming on the show. We'll have you on soon, and we'll have to have you on when you open up that new facility. I'll either go down there in person, or even if I don't, we'll have a camera out front, and we'll bring you on for a live interview.
Well, that would be great.
That'd be awesome.
I really appreciate the time, Tim.
Hey, take it easy. Take it easy.
Enjoy that nice,
that nice weather. You guys can enjoy the 3PL Summit all day on FreightWaves TV this Wednesday. What the Truck will be coming live from that. I believe we're in our usual slot. It's going to be a good time. We'll have some awesome guests. Thank you for joining us on this episode. You can find all of these on FreightWaves YouTube channels, an entire playlist of all these What the Trucks. If you prefer it on audio, look up What the Truck wherever you get your audio podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Timothy Dooner and find this show at FW What the Truck. Hey, take care and don't be a stranger.